Tanum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Around the Payload, which is a High Noon production. I am your host, The Blevins, and we've got a star-studded cast for you today, which I will introduce in just a second. But first, if this is your first time listening, this show is basically a, well, for lack of a better word, it's a copy of Around the Horn from ESPN, but definitely a legally different copy, and maybe... I keep digging myself into a, deeper into a hole every time I introduce the show, but please, please stop the cease and desist letters. Basically, we're going to be going and talking about all stuff Overwatch League. Everyone's going to get a chance to chime in. I'm going to be giving out arbitrary points, and you're going to hear a sound that sounds kind of like this, and that is going to be me giving out points to our contestants. The final two will be in the showdown, and we will crown one winner this week. But without further ado, let's introduce our guest. We first, to the upper right, we have Sabre Reality, the creator, a creator for Overbuff, Overwatch Wire, and host of PBR Show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
We also, in the upper right, have Hexagrams. Yes, that Hexagrams, the Overwatch League caster, and of course, the host of the future top-rated podcast, Hex's Movie Night. It's got to happen one of these times.
One of these days. One of these days. That's been on the back burner so long.
That, it's been on the back burner longer than Bartolo Colon has been. Okay, I blew it. I blew it. I'm stealing the points. Let's move on. We also have I Play Games, the host of Omnic Lab and Overwatch League Recap. What's up, buddy?
Hey, thanks for having me back. I'm hoping I can defend my Shanghai Dragons title on the show. Always losing.
Well, speaking of the Shanghai Dragons title, we have Around the Payload's most infamous guest, who I think has been referenced more than any other guest, player, host, personality, team, or otherwise. And that, of course, is Thorn Rain, who is the host of the Blackwatch Report. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me. And any publicity is good publicity, I think.
That's well entirely not true.
That is a thing
look
that
away from the camera now.
That is a thing that people who have lost all too many points on Around the Payload say. But let's jump in and start with round number one.
Round one, capture the objective.
So at the beginning of Overwatch League, we saw Seoul Dynasty. And everyone thought they were going to be the best team in the league, hands down, everyone at the top of everyone's power rankings. And we've started to see somewhat of a little bit of a decline from now, from there, at least, maybe a little bit of a leveling off. And now it seems like when they're not playing Jaehong and not playing, you know, their starters at times, it seems almost like they're throwing at times. So, Sabre Reality, we'll start with you. Is Seoul's coaching staff bamboozling themselves with all these roster changes and moving?
It sure seems like it, doesn't it? I mean, there has been some major questionable decisions going on these last few weeks or months even, I guess. Or heck, even getting rid of players like Bunny. Bunny went over to Valiant and has been kicking so much butt. I don't know why they didn't make better use of him when they had him. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they are, they have a lot of, they need to do a lot of soul searching here because
I'll give you get the point for the pun there for sure. Nice. Definitely a lot of soul searching needed. But Hexagrams, what are your thoughts here? Is Seoul next leveling themselves too much?
I don't know. Maybe not. I just don't think that even if they put in their all-star roster that they're going to be the best team in Overwatch League. And I think a lot of the changes that you're going to see out of several teams, and we'll get to a lot of these topics, are like, are we the best team? Do we have the ability to compete with the best teams? If the answer is no, then let's just change stuff. Because I think there's a lot of people like, no one wants to be like, we're sixth. We're a good Overwatch League team. No, everyone's looking for the top spot. And maybe they're mind-gaming themselves a little bit too much. Maybe the meta shifting on them is throwing them off a little bit, but I generally just think that we don't know a lot of the things that we don't know. So it's like, is he not playing because he doesn't want to play? Is it, if there's a lot going on, and they're obviously just trying different stuff. But I think even if you put in your all-star starting six, that this team's not beating New York or London anytime soon anyway. So you try to change things up.
True. I mean, it's definitely not beating New York. I don't know about London, but that's that's the beauty of being the host of the show. I can just move the camera. But Thorn Rain, what are your thoughts here on Seoul and their lack of success lately?
I mean, like was said, everybody thought that they were going to come in and just be a dominant force. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, like we saw them, they were good. They were competing, but now it's like they don't even want to compete. They're starting odd comps and losing out early on. I mean, if you want to win and you want to not be in the middle of the pack, you don't start your bench players. You let your starters get you to the finish line, and then you push the other guys out there and say, here, finish the race. Mm-hmm. And it's just weird. Like, we saw them, you know, in Apex and everything like that. These are guys that have talent, but they're not being utilized properly. Mm-hmm. And that's coming down to the weird comps that the coaching staff is coming up with. And I think it's really hurting them.
Yeah, it's definitely not working, at least at the current juncture. But I play last words here on Seoul and their roster decisions.
One thing I will say is that I don't know if it has to do so much with the coaching staff. Maybe they have a lot to do with it. But I think that Seoul, at least in the beginning, was one of the stronger teams because they came in together as already a team. They were already very organized compared to a lot of the other teams who were just kind of meshing together. Mm-hmm. They were not a team before, aside from a few select ones. And they're also probably one of the most studied teams since they came into the league, because they were supposed to be the top dog, the guys that were going to beat everyone. And we have teams like the Outlaws who've been studying their strategies pretty much since the World Cup, honestly. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think that it's a matter of time just for other teams to catch up. And it's happening right now. And Seoul right now is struggling, maybe because of some coaching decisions. But I think it comes down to the players and to other teams just bringing that much more of a tough game.
Yeah.
Well, just one last point here. I mean, like, the way they lost against Valiant, they just got rocked. So, I mean, they got, like, full held on Junkertown. There's, like, all these scores are completely one-sided. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, that's not coaching. That's just not clicking heads.
Yeah, maybe we just all as a community overvalued the Miros, the Jayhongs, the Tobys, etc. Who knows? I mean, we'll definitely see how they finish out the rest of the season and if they make any changes in the offseason. But let's move on, and this kind of piggybacks off of Seoul's lack of success. But, you know, we've seen London Spitfire start to be a little bit in decline. We saw New York Excelsior lose to the Boston Uprising last week. And I mean, it's been a talking point I definitely jumped ahead. Okay, that's fine. We'll just swap it.
I'm wondering, but okay.
How are you going to bring this back to what I said?
Well, you know what? If that's the beauty of being the host and not having points, I can't remove points from myself. We'll talk about that stuff later. Let's talk about a different. Let's talk about a different team having turmoil. We're going to talk about the Dallas Fuel here, I'm still looking at the wrong question. We're going to talk about the Dallas Fuel here, who announced that both Kai, their head coach, and Rascal, a DPS player, have been released from the Fuel. So I don't keep putting my foot in my mouth. Hexagrams, just take this one away. What are your thoughts on the Dallas Fuel, this decision, this whole mess of a team that's going on right now?
Oh, Rascal, we hardly knew ye on the Fuel. So I don't know. Again, it's kind of going to go back to my first point, and I don't think that it's Kai's fault, like, at all, especially if you look at, like, the recent results when they finally started to put together some competitive stuff. But if you go back to stage one and stage two, why is he running this? Why is he running that? Like, I sat down with him once just at lunch, and he's like, I don't know what people want from me. They don't know that this is happening. This is happening. There's so much stuff behind the scenes. Like, I can't put this guy in because of this. And it's like, at the end of the day, though, the coach has to fall on that sword. And I do look at the Dallas team, and I'm like, I don't know if, like, is the coaching the issue? Can I put together a roster with these guys and make them win games? Because I don't know if that's necessarily the problem there. But if you're going to change stuff, then you just change it from the top down. You go wholesale changes across the boards. Look, they're not winning anything anytime soon, so blow it up, right? Blow it up. The longer you wait, the worse it's going to be. I thought some of those changes could have come earlier on as well, but I don't think it's Kai's fault. But I get why you fired Kai, if that makes sense.
Well, there was one person that can never be fired, and that's the owner of the team. So that Regardless, that's always going to be the case. But Thornrain, what are your thoughts here? Obviously, you're wearing your Houston Outlaws jersey here, so maybe you've got a bit of a grin while you're describing this. But what are your thoughts on dropping Kaikai and dropping Rascal?
Like Hex said, I don't fully fault Kaikai for the way the fuel went, but we've seen a lot of the players talk about how Kaikai was more of a friend, like he was friendlier than an authority figure. Now we don't know how much of that is true and how much it isn't, but I know that if that is the case, once you become a friend with your subordinates, your power wanes away. So if that is the case, he may have been making suggestions as friendly suggestions, and at that point they're just getting blown away. You know, players aren't listening to it. They're like, oh yeah, you know, we'll check that out next time. But as far as Rascal goes, that's a whole weird situation, because if you look at it from the business standpoint, Optic or Dallas, I'm sorry, not Optic, Envious, yeah. Or Dallas, they still have to pay him unless he broke rules, which according to the way everything went, it didn't look like he broke rules, or he had to opt out of his contract. So either, you know, Hastro is just cool with throwing money out the window, like, yeah, I don't even want this dude here because he did something wrong, and he's like, I'll pay for it, or Rascal was just like, I really don't want to be in Dallas.
Yeah, I think,
and signed away his contract.
From what the Hastro AMA happened, like, I think hours before this recording, and I breezed over it. From what it looked like, it was Hastro basically said he can't be here anymore. So it looks like they are going to still be paying that out, but maybe we'll get more details on that. Maybe not. But iPlay, what are you thinking here with the Dallas Fuel, Kaikai, Rascal, etc.?
This one definitely seems like it's a decision straight from the higher ups. Sounds like somebody up there just got fed up, was tired with the losses, the drama. And like you said, they don't mind the financial repercussions. They're just like, listen, I don't want this over here. I want something new. It's an awkward time to do it. That arguably Dallas Fuel was at the best point they've been for the last few months, with Rascal and Effect going in together, OG coming in. The team was finally looking like they were coming together. This definitely throws it up for a loop. So who knows what they're going to bring. I do agree that Kaikai was not necessarily the most hands-on coach, as we've heard from other people in the scene and their team in particular. So I don't know if their strategy-wise is going to be affected too much. I think it's a player-driven team, so I think that the team itself will still hold together, even without Kaikai. But right now, they just don't seem to have a clear direction. So I just don't see them climbing above their rank anytime soon.
Yeah, doesn't really seem like they've had a direction since they were wearing Envious jerseys and didn't lose ever. Sabriel, last words here on this whole Dallas Fuel situation.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with the others, where it does feel like it's something that came from the higher ups, as it were. Maybe they are just a little leery after the whole XQC situation. Like when I talked to them back at the beginning of the Overwatch League, they were like, yeah, whatever, we have the stream team. If you don't like us, so what? And all of a sudden we have this XQ thing blow up and all eyes were on them. And now all of a sudden we have a player who's not causing the scene publicly too much, like XQC was, but all of a sudden, like, maybe we should just stop this before it gets worse.
Yeah. The one thing I hope is that Rascal makes it back into the league, if for nothing else than to be able to spam play Rascal, you cowards. I don't care who it is, but I want someone to be able to play him. You cowards.
The culture is broken, and they have to start trying to figure out how that is, and if that's coaching, if that's ownership, something. The culture is obviously broken when no one on that team is happy and everyone wants to leave. That's something that you cannot build a team around.
Right. How can you make it so that literally no one is happy? You'd think there'd be at least one person, but maybe they'll fix something in the rest of this season, and hopefully perhaps by season two. But let's move on. And spawning from this whole Rascal getting dropped after the signing period, it puts Rascal obviously in an awkward spot. It also puts Dallas in somewhat of an awkward spot. There's a couple other teams that have been affected by this, but there can be no changes to the roster in terms of addition here. That includes people, players who have been dropped and picking up free agents. So, you know, should teams be able to actually pick up free agents after the signing period? If, you know, like Rascal, should the, you know, Boston Uprising be able to pick up Rascal right now, like you would be able to do in traditional sports leagues? And Thornrain, we'll start with you. Is this something that should be able to happen, or should we just stick with the signing period and that's that, and there's no talk after it?
I mean, in the way that it's currently written, no. I think it should stay completely the way it is, but going forward after this season, I think it should be reevaluated. I had brought it up on my show a couple episodes ago that a two-way contract would be something that I think would benefit the league, where, you know, teams could have two people, there are two contracts available, like on their academy team or just any contenders or open team that they felt comfortable with, where they could pay them the minimum league salary, pay the team that they're playing for kind of like a housing fee. And then if they wanted to bring them up, you know, they would have to put one of their players on reserve that they couldn't play. And it would be a 2 week lock. Like you wouldn't be able to switch them week to week. They would have to go 2 weeks, you know, on reserve before they were able to be reactivated. Now they could go for the rest of the season on reserve with the two-way contract coming up and staying there, but it would give teams the ability past the 12, but not actually having the 12 available at all times. It's just something that the league needs to look into to allow flexibility for instances like this, because, I mean, this isn't something that really, it's not Boston's fault, but in the same vein, no other team is going to be allowed to sign anybody if they drop somebody. Like, Dallas isn't going to be able to pick up anybody for Rascal. So just to keep it in fair, no, they shouldn't be able to pick anybody up.
Gotcha. iPlay, what are your thoughts on this? Should teams be able to pick up free agents during the season but not be able to make trades still?
I definitely agree with what you said. Right now it would be too unfair to change the rule midway. But if this season has taught us anything, is that you never know what's going to happen, man. And it happened to Boston. It's happening to Dallas. Thank God it hasn't happened to a team like Mayhem when they only had six players. Because what do you do if it happens to them? And at the end of the day,
I don't even know what the league rules are for that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that maybe some flexibility in that sense would be beneficial for all the teams. And this inconsistency in players might, you know, slow down as teams gather, you know, solid rosters and players take it more seriously. They find the right people. But then again, you're going to have expansion teams that are going to go through the same kind of initial period, finding their roster and so on. So I don't know, maybe being more flexible with being able to pick up players in the future might be beneficial for everyone in the long run.
Good points there. Sabre Reality, what are you thinking here? Should we keep everything the same, or is there maybe some room for growth here with the free agency?
Yeah. This season, yeah, just keep it the same. But down the road, like, for sure, make up some rules for it, reevaluate it, like there's suggested. Like, but then it also opens up a whole other slew of questions. Like, do we have different rules for players who were on a team and were dropped? Do we have different rules where maybe we can pick from our academy team, but not from anywhere else? Or even just like, can we just pick any yokel off the street like me? But I mean, don't do that. Bad idea. But I think it should look at it in the future.
Yeah. I have said multiple times on the show that I could score more points than Shanghai Dragons players if a different team played around me being Moira. That's probably still not true. But Hex, last words here on the free agency system, the trading, etc. What are you thinking?
I think you should do it like the way traditional sports have done it, and it has to be some sort of waiver system. I think it's bad for the league when you have someone that's like this talented, as Rascal I think clearly is, that he's not going to be able to play. It's just bad for the league. You want all your best talent to be playing. But you also have to worry about, since there is a trade deadline, and I think that's good. I thought the trade deadline in that kind of season is always real super hype. Like, oh, it's trade. What's going to happen? It's the hot stove season. But you can't have a kind of a wink nod of like, hey, I think we're going to be releasing Rascal if anyone
right.
Him up, right? It's got to go through the bottom up, right? Your first team on the bottom gets first crack at the waiver, and that's something that has to occur. And I think that actually just adds even more fun to it, too. It's like, is he going to clear waivers? Then if someone clears waivers, sure, sign him. I think that's fair as well. So I think it's just bad for the league overall to have very good players who aren't in your league, period. And that's one way to fix it.
Yeah. I mean, it also, as it stands, like Thorne kind of mentioned, like kind of makes the there's like more of a jump between contenders and Overwatch League. It's not like a farm system. Like I think they kind of build it as, at least a little bit with the Academy teams. But that does bring us to the end of round number one. Let us review the scores for our audio listeners in the future. And this one, I say it all the time, but this one's really close here. We've got Saber Reality at 15 points right now. We've got a two-way tie at second place with Thorn and iPlay with 16 points, and Hex leading the pack right now with 17 points. But there's still a lot of...
so rigged.
Quote,
I'll still do
it's
your show,
not rigged.
Win. You don't have to do
it's,
this.
It's not rigged. it's never rigged. But let's move on to round number two.
Round two. Capture the objective.
We've seen, obviously, Shanghai has made a lot of adjustments to their roster. They've brought on a lot of new players, and they've actually started to look better? Question mark. They still haven't won yet, but iPlay, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Shanghai? Are they getting better? Do you think that they might get a win sometime soon?
I think they're definitely getting better. There's no argue about that. I think that their new additions, Kikuri, for example, is doing great. Whether they're going to get that win, though, especially the stage still up for debate, they couldn't even take it from Dallas Fuel, which arguably was the team that was the most shaky looking. Mm-hmm. They had their chance. They let it off, scatter into the dust. So I don't know. At this point, I don't think they're going to be able to get a win this stage. I do see a lot of improvement. I think it's a resilient team. Unlike other teams who've been in the dumps there, I don't think that they've let their attitude, you know, get to them. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they have internal fights, or at least not that we've seen. If they do, they've at least been able to conceal it inside of the team and kept it in-house. So I don't know. I think that they're going to get better over time. I think that at this point, they're still the bottom of the barrel, and they probably will be for the rest of the stage.
Mm. For sure. Sabriel, their Shanghai Dragons are playing against the number 11 team, Florida Mayhem, this week. Is there any shot? Are they getting good enough to be able to compete with them?
If it was next season, next stage, I think they'd have a chance. Right now, I think, well, of course, the Shanghai Dragons are looking better. I think the kind of, you watch, look at them now, they're kind of starting to get to that level where a lot of teams, like even the Mayhem, were at the beginning of stage one. They're a little uncoordinated. Hey, we're on the stage, whatever. But they're starting to kind of get there. You're starting to see signs of life. They're starting to get these pieces together. And maybe I think they might get a win by the end of season one. If it's going to happen, maybe tomorrow, or season, whenever they play the Mayhem, or Shock, or Fuel. I think that's what it's going
to
be.
There's definitely some competitive matches at the very least to be played. But Hexagrams, the Shanghai Dragons are saying they are going to end this season with 10 wins. Are they going to be anywhere near that?
I think if you remove the zero off of that 10, probably got a shot at it. I don't think they go winless, absolutely. I think they're definitely getting better. My boy Dia coming back. I've been like low-key rooting for this team since day one. I have them in like my top six in all of OWL because I had just come off of OWPS. And I'm like, there's a lot of talent over here. And then Shanghai's like, yeah, we don't want any of those guys. All right. Dia, I think, is still great. He's an amazing player. We saw him in the preseason almost carry them against Seoul just on that Widow. So there's going to be a game where he just takes them to wherever they need to go. The biggest questions, like, they look a lot better now. You got Dia and Otto there. You can run a true full dive. We'll see how things change. The biggest problem is they still don't have a Zenyatta player. They just have never had a Zenyatta player on this team. Zhufan Jun, who now goes by Sky, I believe, is a great Ana, but not really the meta for it right now. They haven't been rotating him in as well. So the tank line got better. I never thought the DPS was the issues, even when they had Undead on the team. I thought that was still fine because they're both great players. But the support line is still the same support line it was with B612 and 130, who now go by Altering and Freefeel. Thank God for that. But they've been the problem for a long time. They struggle together. They struggle against with Mercy. They still don't have a Zenyatta player, and I still think Zenyatta is a good hero to have.
Yeah. Definitely. We are going to be sending out our applications for Shanghai Dragons tryouts for sure. But Thorn, last words here on Shanghai and their bleak if not completely blank future?
Better than previous stages? Yes, slightly. Still not just like better as a team. They got a lot of communication issues that they got to get through. And like Hex said, these last couple games with the new people in, their biggest issue was literally like the tanks sitting at 10 health because they were getting no heals. Yeah. And then Gaguri getting wrecked. And it's like, you got tanks, why aren't you healing them? I think that they need to focus on, you know, getting their healers more situated, and then getting the communications and the call-outs better, because they just, they didn't look like they were playing as a team. They looked like a just a quick regular match pub. Quick match pub, like getting randomly selected together. They have talent. It's just putting the talent together.
I mean, just kind of follow, like, the, it's because we all knocked on Roshan early on too, right, when he was playing Winston and dying too much, but there's just no trust. Like, you know, like the main tanks and other teams are like, I'm at 20 health, that's like probably 19 more than I need because my boy's got my back. And there's just no trust there, so they can't play the same way they want to.
Except earlier on when Janus would just feed as Winston, but that's another conversation that we'll actually start having right about now, because, man, man, this question is just throwing me for a loop. I just can't, I can't stay on today. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but maybe a little bit now. Okay, the the question I alluded to earlier was in regards to Korean player teams with Korean, most majority Korean players not being as dominating as they once were, or at least were once thought to have been. We saw New York lose last week. We've seen London lose a handful of times. We've seen Seoul start to really kind of decline. So, Sabriality, we'll start with you with your with your defeated looking London Spitfire flag. Is this the end of? Is this the great leveling off of all the teams in Overwatch League, or at least the East and West, as many people claim it to be?
Yeah, it was bound to happen. I mean, right? I mean, one of the common complaints before Overwatch League even started was from the Western pros was, we don't get to play the same number of games the Koreans do. So of course they're naturally better. And now they get a point where they're all playing the same amount and they could scrim every day if they want to. I mean, and some do. And yeah, they're bound to catch up. So yeah, I mean, some of the Koreans, like Dynasty, kind of just plateaued. And so, yeah, it was going to happen. And so, yeah, they're no longer dominating.
Yeah, for sure. Hex, what are your thoughts on this phenomena?
I thought it's completely expected. I don't think that Korean players are inherently any better than Western players, but Korean culture around esports has always been inherently better than Western culture around it. And now, I mean, it is the great equalizer. Everyone lives here. Everyone's got, like, everyone's in the same environment. If anything, it's going to hurt the Koreans more because they're getting homesick. You're sending players home to get back, and they're out of their element now. And it's like everyone can just go down to the studio. And right now, I think the teams that we're going to see pushing through are the teams that are dealing with fatigue the best, because I can tell you the atmosphere overall, and as from like talent, everyone, maybe it's just me projecting, it seemed like everyone's going through like a week of like, hey man, this is a really long deal, isn't it? So it's just like but it's just those teams that have been adapting to that as well. But I thought this was going to happen when you take away the culture and everyone's in the same environment. I mean, clicking heads is clicking heads.
True story. Thorn, what are you thinking here? Is this a one-time thing, or are we just forever at parity here in the league?
I mean, I think we've seen it literally from stage one, day one. The Western teams have been slowly catching up to the Korean teams. It's just when you play someone that's better than you, you learn things, you start to adapt to them, you catch nuances in their gameplay, and the longer it goes on, the more you catch, the more you're able to counter. Come stage four, we might see Western teams, you know, just dominate. I mean, we're already starting to see it with Seoul Dynasty. Like, they're getting shut down now. So I think that we're gonna get to a point where all of the teams will be somewhat on a level playing field. You'll still have your bad teams, but that's not so much a Western Korean type thing. That's just, it's a bad team. But no, I think that we're well on our way to being, you know, equals when it comes to Overwatch League esports across all regions.
For sure. I play last words here on the Korean team's fall from grace.
I think I'm with Hex on this one. I think that it's generally across the board. You're seeing all of the Korean teams struggle a little bit. And I think it has to do a lot with the environment that they're in right now. Not only do the Western teams have a lot more leeway, a lot more time and practice to catch up to them, but the honeymoon period for them, it's over. Their vacation in LA, getting paid to play Overwatch, that kind of like romance eventually disappears. And you realize, okay, this is a job. You know, I do have to wake up every day and grind out for this game, and things are expected of me. And I don't have the supporting crew that I used to have at home. I don't have my family with me. I don't have my friends. I don't have the food that I like. I'm in an alien environment. And I've done the move from a country to another country. And I can tell you that those first few months, like 3 or 4, it's all cool. It's fun. You're in a new city. You're exploring a lot of new things. But after those 3-4 months are over, you realize, wow, I don't have my friends anymore. I'm not going back to them. I don't have the things that I used to do anymore. My social life is completely different. I'm having to rebuild my life in some other ways. So I think there's a lot of distracting factors for them. But I'm willing to bet that if we were to take the fight to another place, if the Overwatch League would expand next stage and now we go to Korea and they get to play over there with their fandom, things might be a little bit different. Because think about it, when they're walking into the stage, who are all the fans cheering for? You got a ton of people cheering for Outlaws, for even for Dallas, even not being as good as a team as people were thought they were going to be. They still have more fans than a lot of these full Korean roster teams. So I don't know. I think it has a lot to do with that.
True. A lot of factors here, but it does seem like Overwatch League has become the great equalizer, at least in some ways. And now I'm on the right question here. I swear, I'm awake here. We're going to be talking about the topic I was dreading for this whole week after it happened. New York lost to Boston. New York Excelsior, of course, is the top team in the Overwatch League in terms of record. Boston came off of what can only be described as a traumatic experience for them as a team, and losing one of their star DPS players, and they ended up pulling off the win here. So, Hex, what are your thoughts on this match? Like, Boston, is New York not as good as we thought? Is Boston way better? What did you take away from this one?
New York's fine. I always like kind of give teams like that the great stuff. Like, oh, they probably just didn't prepare as much as they could have for Boston. And New York's on this spot where like they can start looking past teams. But really, if we want to keep it simple, Stryker is a god. The Stryker, I mean, no, yeah. it honestly is, because the way that he was able to shut down Say Beobi and not allow Say Beobi to do the things he normally does, and forcing him into 1v1s, like no one's really looking after Say Beobi trying to get him into a 1v1, but Stryker went after it. And I think there is some serious talk amongst a lot of people that is he actually just the best Tracer in Overwatch League right now. I mean, how he's playing, there's no fault in his game, and I think that's the big reason why Boston won. I'm not worried about New York though.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been saying for a very long time that Stryker is like quietly the best, or at least one of the best players in Overwatch League. Thorn, what are you thinking? Have you lost any confidence in New York? Are you buying full into Boston? What are you thinking?
One, I'll never buy full into Boston. That doesn't happen here. No, I haven't lost any faith in New York. I mean, teams and players sometimes have bad days, have bad games. We've seen Boston, you know, getting better. I mean, they're on like an 8-game win streak right now. So like Hex said, maybe New York just underprepared. They thought, you know, it's Boston, we'll look ahead to the next 2-3 whatever match, and didn't really think about it. And then with the drama that happened, they might have just kind of thrown it in there like, ah, this might be a little bit easier without someone else in there. So I don't see New York having an issue. You know, a slump is more than one game. So far they've lost one game per stage. If we see them lose this coming week, both games, okay, then we have a problem. Right now, one game, a stage, that's fine by me.
Makes a lot of sense. iPlay, what are your thoughts on Boston, New York, etc.?
I was genuinely surprised. I did not expect this one, especially after the whole Dreamcasper thing. And I thought Boston would have been debilitated, but I think after seeing that match, there's a lot to say from their coaching staff and the players themselves. This is a team that is very, very solid, regardless of if they have the star DPS player or not. I was impressed by mistakes. I think that definitely he was not on the same level as Dreamcasper, but he definitely filled in the role pretty well, and he did his job enough to enable the rest of his team to do what they needed to do to bring home the win. Striker, definitely, what a beast. I think more than anything, their front line is really, really smart in the way that they engage. It's really cool to fun to watch the team play because they're so orchestrated and coordinated. You see the D.Va come in as the Winston backs up, and they just kind of keep rotating that pressure. They stay alive against all odds sometimes. And the way that they engage is so creative. Watching them go against Aviobi and Jonak was very, very fun. So props to Boston. I definitely think that NYXL is still the top team in the league, and they will continue to be for a while. But wow, it's definitely a testament to how strong their teamwork is.
For sure. Save Reality, last words here. I mean, I know you're probably not buying too much into Boston because you've got to play them this week as the London Spitfire, but are you afraid? Are you scared here of Boston and their performance?
Well, I'm going to interject there real quick. I started to think, I think you put this question in here to help us help you work through.
this is definitely therapeutic. I needed someone to tell me it's going to be okay.
But and yeah, if you were at PAX East, you saw me wave my little flag around, and the Lawa's booer is sitting right here in the middle.
Yeah, we definitely may or may not have booed when you brought London Spitfire.
But am I scared of Boston? Yeah, I believe in these kids for a while. Ever since I first saw them, they all seemed a little nervous and weren't sure about this whole Overwatch League thing. But they've shown time and time again, like, you know, they had to have what it takes. And Striker. Mm-hmm. He's been like a hidden gem. I don't think they even Boston realized what they had in him. He said in an interview for Watchpoint, he said, like, we didn't have much time to practice this lineup, but you would not know that at all.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think Spitfire should be scared of Boston. Boston's gonna surprise everyone and surprise them.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, I mean, when we were talking with, I believe it was Grim Reality, and there was a couple other people, like, independent of each other, we asked before the league started, like, who's like the best player that no one knows about, and almost everyone at least mentioned Striker at some point. So definitely a force to be reckoned with. But that is going to bring us to the end of round number two. Before we roll into our last round of regular play, we will briefly review the scores, and we've had a little bit of a flip here. In fourth place, we've got Hexagrams at 27 points. Of course, now it's rigged the other direction. Now I get it. We've got Thorn with 30 points. We've got Sabriel with 31 points, and iPlay leading the pack with 33 points. The Shanghai Dragons himself may be getting a win here, but
it's the only one they get a win.
It's close enough to be anyone's game as we go into round number three.
The payload is approaching its destination.
Round number three, of course, is the buy or sell round. Buy means agree, sell means disagree. For those of you who are here for the first time listening in, and we'll start with you, Thorn. Buy or sell, mistakes for Boston. I mean, they don't really have a choice necessarily to play him or not, but maybe his performance and how you see him. Buy or selling mistakes for Boston.
Well, you literally took my joke because it was buy, because they literally have to buy him. They can't do anything without him unless they want to run triple support, because I believe they picked up a support right at the end of the signing window, which was kind of awkward. But unless they want to throw away their season, they got to run with mistakes. And from what we saw from him, I mean, he looked good. Like, he's definitely league ready. He should have been probably getting a little bit more play. I know that they had Dreamcasper and he was doing his thing. But they had this kid sitting on the bench, and with more time, I think that mistakes won't be a mistake for Boston.
I don't know if I should cheer or boo for that, so I'm just going to leave the points even there. I play buying or selling mistakes for the Boston Uprising.
Definitely buy. I think that Boston Uprising is going to be looking to pick up another DPS, but I don't think that any DPS can just come in and fill in the way that he did. Mm-hmm. He knows the play style. He knows how his team moves. He did a fantastic job playing to the team. Obviously, he's not on the level of, you know, a Sabiobi or even Dreamcast himself, but I think that he complements the team really well. And I see him more like a player like Snillo, which is not your star Tracer player, but he is very good at doing his job, just distracting people, getting mm-hmm. the back line, being in the right places at the right time, providing the support DPS where it's needed. I think this is the kind of guy that Mistakes is. And unless they can find another guy that can fill in that style, he's your guy for now.
Yeah, I mean, again, they really don't have a choice, but at least not now. Sabreality, what are your thoughts here? Buying or selling Mistakes for Boston?
Easy buy. This kid, just give him some more time, and he's going to be up there. He's got a big hero pool. He can he can basically fill in any role that's needed in DPS wise whenever it comes down to it. So yeah, buy.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, anyone who's playing with Striker is probably going to look good, right?
true.
But Hex, last words here: buying or selling Mistakes for the Boston Uprising.
I 100% am buying Stanislav Danilov, one of the best names in all of the world.
That is true.
he's a really sweet guy, too. I've talked to him a couple times. I'm like, are you just waiting for the Sombra meta to get in here? Because we thought that might be his position as like a backup Tracer who could play some Sombra. It's also interesting you bring up Snillo. These guys played together on Team 1-2-3. It kind of shocked a lot of people in EU early on in Contender Season 0. Yeah. I mean, what more do you want from him? I mean, even beyond just the game against NYXL, if you look at some of the individual performances he had against Florida, he had that ridiculous Widow, and I'm like, oh, dude, that was sick. And he tells me, he's like, oh, I got lucky. Like, that's how humble he is about this. He really didn't think he did anything good. And you talk about his pool, the only question I still have going forward is, can he play the Genji at a reasonable level? Because that's what Casper did bring to them. And I talked to him about it, and he said, it's just a matter of getting more confident in making my calls as Genji, not anything mechanics. He says his mechanics are fine, it's just his coordination. So I'm 100% in on him. I mean, yeah, they have to be, but I think that he's provided more than expected, and I think he will continue to improve. And I honestly just rooting for him on a personal level.
Yeah,
nice.
Definitely a person to root for, except for the fact that he plays against Boston and is literal scum of the earth. But let's move on. Talk about a different team here. We've got the LA Valiant, who have been on a tear these last couple of weeks. In stage three, they've also made a couple of changes to their roster. They picked up Bunny. They've dropped some players. They've done all sorts of stuff, and they haven't lost yet. So I play buying or selling the Valiant as the real deal right now.
At this point, you gotta buy. I mean, the results speak for themselves. I was actually very surprised about it because, like you said, there's been a lot of changes going on the roster. They did pick up a couple of players, but they did also let go a lot of talent. So I honestly didn't know what to expect from them. And at this point, they're just kicking everyone's butt. There's no stopping them. They got a 4-0 record. I personally see them in the playoffs at this point. So this team is working out for them.
Sabreality, are you buying the LA Valiant right now, or are you selling them?
Sell before you can. Sell. They have had a soft schedule so far. Dragons, Dynasty, Fuel, Shock. I mean, they went against Shock when Architect refused to get off Sombra. You would not do it. And, you know, the entire season, every time I watch these guys, sure, they have some great plays, but I'd never walk away feeling like, yes, Valiant, yeah. But no, sell.
Yeah, I was wondering if we were going to get some dissent here, and we finally got it. Hexagrams, settle the score here. Are you buying or selling the LA Valiant right now?
Can I just hold? Can I just hold position?
You can, but it will not gain you points.
That's fine. I don't need your silly points anyway. That's kind of the feel. I guess for the moment, it is a tentative buy. They've looked good. They beat everyone in front of them. They've looked all right, but I'd like to see teams be a little more dominant. But I think some of that might just be the new rosters coming in. Mm-hmm. And I think the changes that they made, while they looked questionable from the outside, have made perfect sense. You bring in like a guy like Custa, who's just going to turn the energy around in that organization, which I think they may have needed at that point of time. He's a great caller. And then like Kareem is back on his best heroes. Custom will play whatever you need him to play. He's like, I guess I'm Lucio now, and he just grinds out thousands of hours of Lucio. It's insane. And then I think Bunny's a good addition. I think I cast them playing, and I was like, I just like how this guy plays because he plays dumb and it works. It's like super aggressive, and you always have to deal with him. He's always going to be making a play even when he shouldn't. So like, I love how he plays, and right now I'm definitely buying, but I would like to see them against a London, against a New York, just really gauge where they're at.
Yeah, for sure. I feel similar. Thornrain, you're here. Are we tying it up at buy-ish, or are you going a different direction?
Well, since last time I was on, I was told I'm not allowed to rent.
Yeah, no, you can't rent the LA Valiant.
Dude, you couldn't afford to rent that. This shit is pricey.
So I'm going sell. Like Sabre Reality said, they've had a very, very soft schedule, and their hardest opponent was the Seoul Dynasty. And as we've seen, they're doing weird stuff that just isn't working. So you can't even really hold that to a high standard. So I'm selling them this week, but I'll pay a premium next week if they beat the Gladiators and London. But until I see them go up against the Gladiators, who's on a tear right now, like, they're looking fantastic. And yeah, London is down at the bottom, but London is still very much a playoff contender for the, the final playoffs. Sell until I see them play real opponents.
So I like it. You're going to be, if they go 2-0 this week, you're paying a heavy premium. That's for sure. Cause
I'll
I think
the premium. I'll open the wallet.
I don't know if you've got enough to buy it from me, at least. Cause I bought in heavily on multiple shows this week for the Valiant, but let's move on here. So remember when Mercy got nerfed, and beforehand Mercy was like the meta, and everyone was like, oh, Mercy meta is awful. And then it got nerfed, like, oh, Mercy's gone. And now she just kind of came back. We just saw Mercy pass Zenyatta this week as the most popular support in Overwatch League. So Sabre Reality, buy or sell this second coming of the, I guess, soft Mercy meta.
Well, despite being dead, if Overwatch Twitter, reactions on Overwatch Twitter to players anytime she is touched, I'm going to say bye. You know, the Mercy meta feels different. Mercy meta feels different this time because she's not sitting there just rezzing left and right, left and right. And it just, I don't think it feels bad to have her back anymore. So bye.
I definitely agree with you there. Hex, is it different from the caster's booth, this meta, even with a similar amount of Mercy?
Oh, yeah. Just like having a single res and just where she is now is completely different than like the double res absolute nonsense. So it was like, it was impossible to call. It was the most difficult meta in Overwatch ever to cast, to be honest. Because fights never ended, and then it's just like, hey, they got two kills, and it doesn't matter. No one cares. I don't know. I don't know if it's the Mercy meta. I feel like it's the Widow meta. I think that that you're seeing Mercy so much with Widow now, and just look at Volskaya first, and all that it ever matters is your first picks, right? And so when you lose your Widow early and you don't have a Mercy, which some teams have oddly enough run, you're just dead because the other team is going to get another pick and you're going to have your own resurrection on the Widow. So Widow's always allowed Mercy in this meta to have safe resurrections in those spots. She's always a mile away from the battlefield. And the big thing with Mercy that I was, we always want to see is, will she have vertical escapes? And Widow gives you that. Your dive tanks give you that. So there's really no need to run her. I thought we'd always see her even when you see Pharah again, but it makes a ton of sense. It just erases a mistake. And when so many of these games come down to Widow v Widow, having an extra life on that hero is pretty good.
Yeah, and you now know that the show is definitely rigged because I tricked you into not saying buy or sell, so that's going to cost you points.
I don't care. I don't care.
It's too late now. You're losing points. It's rigged, remember. Thornrain, buying or selling this new soft Mercy meta?
I'm selling it. even with the uptick, it's a completely different Mercy. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not getting half your team res when she pops Valk. So with the way she plays now, she's not the deciding factor in the matches, which is what made her the Mercy meta back when she could do that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you didn't have a Mercy, you weren't winning. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Now you can win without the Mercy. The Mercy just makes your win a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Before it was required. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't even call this a Mercy meta. Like Hex said, it's probably more a Widow meta. Mm-hmm. With damage buff on the side. So mm-hmm. No, I'm selling.
Gotcha. I play last words here on the resurgence of Mercy.
I will say I buy it just in the sense that I don't think that Mercy ever became a bad pick. She's always been a very solid healer, even after the nerfs and taking away her double resurrect. I think that you just took away certain things that were kind of bullshit, right? Like, even in the Overwatch League, you had certain Mercies just doing the drive-by res by, like, Fleta mm-hmm. or, like, you know, Bird Ring or something. It's like, what? Really? You're just going to do that much of a risk and then come out unscathed and revive your teammate? It was just, you know, just gross. And it was almost disrespectful to some of these players. So, I don't know. You can't do that anymore, which puts her in a good spot, in my opinion. The res is still very valuable, like Hex said, for your Widowmaker. She's still very good in the Pharah maps, where she can mm-hmm. just, you know, go pharmacy up in the air. And she meshes really well with current comps, like the dive meta, or even the triple tank, just because she's such a consistent healer. I don't think that any other healer can output the same amount of healing so consistently on a single target, at mm-hmm. least. So I don't know. I think she's a good addition. She's in a good spot right now. I like where she is, and she enables heroes that I particularly find really fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely a lot of, if nothing else, it is definitely different than the quote Mercy meta from before. Don't think anyone's arguing that. But that is going to bring us to our last question here for the regular rounds. And we had this is a little bit less about Overwatch League, or at least we think it's probably not about Overwatch League. Who knows, though? That would be really awkward. But we had the announcement of competitive 6v6 elimination mode in Overwatch. And that's basically like the 3v3 elimination from before, but now it's 6v6 and it's got its own ranking system. So Hex, we'll start with you. Buy or sell this new competitive mode?
Oh, I'll buy it. Seems fun, I guess. People can play it. It's not going to overtake the regular like game mode. So it's fun. I like 3v3. I like lockout. I think those can be really fun. I don't. Mm-hmm. There's people in Talon who disagree with me that they think it is very viable as a competitive mode. And they're like, oh, just think of all the new things you would see. I'm like, yeah, for the first week until everyone figures out exactly what ideal comps are. Like, this is the time we run our Orisa Torb comp. Like, you know exactly if you played any amount of like 3v3 lockout that you eventually will devolve in like the same 3v3 groups going out there all the time. So cool mode, cool concept. I hope people are enjoying it. That's my buy, I guess. I don't know what that.
Yeah, it's like, it's just like people when the new Hearthstone set comes out, it's like, man, there's like 50 decks in the meta. It's like, there absolutely is not that many. You're all just very bad and everyone's the same level of bad. Don't worry, it'll fix itself. Thorin, buying or selling 6v6 competitive mode?
I mean, I'm going to buy it. Anything that gives us more of a chance to get competitive points to buy those shiny gold guns that are just not that important. Yeah, no, I'm down. Unless we see it as like the new tiebreaker for Overwatch League. Like, it's not going to be like super important outside of, hey, I'm going to grab five friends and we're just going to go bash our heads against six other people for a little while and fun. So yeah, bye.
Oh man, the new tiebreaker mode. You heard it here first, folks. I play. What do you think? Buy or sell the new 6v6?
I'm kind of buying that tiebreaker thing. No, I'm
and the points drain away.
Sudden death or something like that. I don't know. That could be interesting in some occasions, but I'm buying it. I think that personally it's a cool mode. I like this mini metas that Blizzard kind of creates with like Lucio Ball, where we had the Capture the Flag one. Now we have the competitive 6v6. It kind of keeps the game fresh. It gives you another way to explore certain heroes that maybe you don't usually play, or just play a little competitively in modes that normally are not there. I don't know. I think that it's a good addition. I like that they are temporary. I wouldn't like him to be permanent because it's just a distractor from the main game modes of the game. But it is kind of a nice little refresher. Go mess around with your friends. Kind of like the events, like Uprising. Just another way to experience the game. And sometimes when you're so cut on into the competitive mode and stuff, the game can become very grindy. So I think that this mode just give another breath of fresh air and another way to gain competitive points, you know?
That is very true. I think truer words have rarely been said than the game feels pretty grindy at this point. But Saber Reality, last words here, buying or selling the competitive elimination mode?
I'm like, buy? I don't know how one can even sell this. Like, hey, cool, we got another mode for a few weeks. It's fun. It's neat. I haven't done elimination for a while, but I'm excited to get my friends together and go back in there and try a new mode. But yeah, there's not much to say about this. It hasn't been said already. Yay, new thing that's going to be there for a while. I don't think we should see that in the OWL unless there's like some kind of exhibition match of fun times. But yeah, bye.
I mean, that would be a fun one to see. I think there's definitely would be tension built into that game mode for sure. That could be entertaining. But that is going to bring us to the end of our regular round play. This is the point that saddens me so, where we have to eliminate two contestants and bring us to our finalists. So to wrap up the points really quick, again, it's rigged apparently, but Hexagrams, you are in dead last with 43 points, though. Noteworthy, if you would have seamlessly integrated a Bartolo Colon reference, it would have put you in second place. I'm just saying.
I was just going to talk about in my last 3 minutes anyway, so yeah. I was not.
In third place, we had the newcomer, Saber Reality, with 46 points. Definitely a respectable score. And that means that the two forever fourth places of Thornrain and iPlay, the two, somehow two Shanghai Dragons fighting off each other in the final round here. As we
this
go
is
to
Dallas Peel versus Shanghai right here.
I don't even know.
This is the dumpster fire of championships.
The dumpster fire of championships for sure, but we will move into our final. And, of course, our final round has no points associated with it. There is one question. Each player is going to be able to choose an answer, and then I and I alone will choose the winner here, which is definitely different because I don't choose the points. The points choose themselves. But let's move on here. London and New York have made the stage playoffs both times, in both stage one and in stage two. So we now have the addition of another team. We could have up to four teams in the stage playoffs. But who is another team that you see making the stage playoffs this stage? And a random number generator has decided that Thornrain, you are going to go first here.
Oh, man, put me on the spot.
I mean, I gave you plenty of time to know that you were going to have to go eventually, right?
Does it have to be a team that hasn't made it to the playoffs?
It can't be London or New York. Those are the only teams it can't be.
Well, see, that works out perfect for me because I really think that we'll see the Gladiators squeaking in, you know, that third or fourth position. Mm-hmm. But I think that the real question here, Blevins, is are we going to see London in the playoffs at all this
Ooh,
time?
That is a good question.
I'll put the Gladiators in there, but I don't think we'll see London in this stage playoffs. So Gladiators and Philly taking it. Philly's going to take London's spot. That's what's going to happen right there.
Interesting, interesting. I play your choice here.
Well, now that we've mentioned all of the top four teams in the league, I guess that my only other choice here would be LA Valiant. I definitely agree that Gladiators have a very good shot. Philly is looking very strong. Spitfire, I just don't see them. I'm sorry for any London fans in this show, but I definitely think that we're gonna be some newcomers, either Gladiators or Valiant, as some new challengers going up the podium.
Oh man, this is tough. Man, I feel like both of you kind of wanted to pick Boston, but knew it would be suicide, and you were both correct in that thought.
I'm just going to say Bill Belichick left my Cleveland Browns. I will never go for Boston.
I am going to continue steering the car directly into the lane of the LA Valiant here. I've been picking them for everything. I'm picking them to go 2-0 this week. I'm picking them to be in the stage playoffs. The Shanghai Dragon, the forever fourth place Shanghai Dragons curse has been broken for at least one player here. That is iPlay. So congratulations. You get your victory music.
Well done.
And you now have the floor here to sell out, shout out, whatever you'd like. The floor is yours, sir.
Awesome. I didn't prepare a speech. I didn't think I was going to get this far. All right, but if you guys want to hear me out or listen to me a little more, you can always catch me in my podcast, Omnic Lab, or The Owl Recap. Check them out. We're always there every single week. That's it.
Cool. Well, that was short and sweet. And Thornrain, you had a taste of victory here. And I was really hoping someone would pick Boston because it would be very easy for me to just immediately. But I was going to immediately buzz someone out and just be like, the other person wins. But you avoided that. But that is going to bring it to the end, everyone. We got to basically exactly an hour. So everyone, give yourselves a round of applause. You have the record for closest to an hour. As a cast. But that is going to be it, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can always check out everything that happens with Around the Payload and all of the High Noon productions over at highnoonpodcast.com. All of the links to everyone here are going to be down in the description below. Make sure you go follow them. But huge thanks to Save Reality, Hexagrams, iPlay Games, and Thornrain for all of them. I'm the Blevins, and catch us next week around the Payload. Bye-bye!